Warning, what follows is a story of monsters, madness, and mayhem. I am Nick.
And I'm Zach.
Welcome to We're in Feared, a barely educational podcast about global folklore that aims to enlighten, entertain, and expand your world.
All right, Nick.
Yes, Zach.
How's it going?
It's going pretty decent. Not too shabby.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I got a story for us to get into tonight.
What?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell me a fucking story?
Yeah, and you're going to listen to it.
I am going to listen to it. I'm in this chair, and that's what I plan on doing.
That's how we do. That's the way she goes.
That's the way she moves. The way she moves.
Yeah.
Isn't that a song, in a way?
It is now.
She if it wasn't. It, move it, move it. What's that song?
I like to move it, move it.
That's the one. Yeah. That's the one's in my head.
All right.
Well, she likes to move it, because that's how we operate.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what do we got?
Well, tonight we're going to talk about a story. It's a little different than a lot of things we've talked about in the past.
Okay, different can be good, so let's see where this takes us.
It's going to be a little different.
Okay.
Well, let's just get into it and how it goes.
I was going to say, does it involve clowns? But we've talked about clowns.
No, no clowns.
Okay. All right. No, we'll see. Let's go. Let's do it.
All right, just west of us.
Okay.
Down old I-80.
You know what my favorite street is?
I-80?
And it's interstate. Isn't that weird? Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
It's like my main street.
Yeah.
Wherever we go, so we usually have to take I-80 to somewhere.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the time.
That's how we operate.
Especially from your...
From my
where
locale.
You reside.
I don't have a quick way to that good old 55. Yeah, so.
55 is where I spend a lot of my time.
Makes a lot. That should be part of a song.
Yeah.
It's 55. Alive on Route 55. It's an interstate. What? Anyways.
Well, there's a state park out west from here. You know which one I refer to? Most likely. Well, let me tell you. Starved Rock.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a hot second since I've been out in them there parts.
Same. I need to get out there again, hopefully, maybe in the coming summer.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Approximately 60 years ago, March 14th, 1960.
Uh-oh.
Francis Murphy, Lillian Oding, and Mildred Lindquist had taken a vacation.
Okay.
And they drove out to Starved Rock.
Okay.
There's the lodge that you can stay at and everything.
It's handsome.
Yeah. It's very cool.
Very much so.
Well, they decided to take a vacation out there. They were going to go bird watching, do some hiking.
It is a good place to watch birds and to walk.
Mm-hmm. So they checked into their room, and they went for a walk.
Okay.
You know, they took some pictures of some birds, they had the binoculars, and they took a quick hike to the St. Louis Canyon.
Sounds fun. I'm sure it's a handsome canyon.
It had begun snowing a little bit.
Okay. What time of year was this again?
March.
Okay, it checks out.
Yeah. And it began snowing on their hike.
Mm-hmm.
A couple days later,
yeah,
their husbands had started to call because they hadn't received word that their wives had checked into the hotel. Their wives were all about 50 years old, so these are middle-aged couples. Like,
sure,
you know, they're like, well, especially in the 60s, nobody had cell phones. There's no texting.
No,
you're supposed to call and check in,
which is safe and reasonable.
Yeah, so they call the lodge.
Okay.
And their beds are found to be not slept in. Their luggage has been placed like they were coming back to the room. Their car is found buried in a foot of snow because that March 14th evening, a snowstorm rolled through.
What kind of a...
And dropped about a foot of snow on the area.
It's this kind of a Starved Rock story. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm sure. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At that point, we have three missing women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the word goes out. The police are notified.
Good call.
The search begins.
It does.
The snow makes it more difficult. A lot of snow covering up.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, right?
Yeah.
So, eventually, people are wandering the trails, searching for these women.
Okay.
They get to St. Louis Canyon, which is a pretty popular destination in the wintertime, especially because it's where there's like, it's a pretty iconic spot in the park where there's a nice little waterfall. And in the wintertime, a lot of the time, it freezes.
Yeah.
And people compare it to like a wintry organ, you know, because it's a piano. Like it looks like the pipes run all the way up over the canyon and it freezes in place. It's pretty cool. It's a nice little spot.
I'm sure it looks beautiful. Yeah, it looks pretty.
However, at this time, there was a grisly sight there as well. Underneath one of the caves where it kind of overlaps the canyon a little bit, like there's little caves that kind of are on the walls of the canyon, was a grisly sight. And fair warning to our listeners, there is going to be some talk of some sexual assault in this episode.
It's this kind of a Star Trek story.
Yeah. So.
These are Star Trek stories, unfortunately. This is a big deal.
It's a place that has violence in its history.
That is certainly a true fact.
The grisly sight was these three women bound with cordage and exposed, we'll say, and brutally beaten in the head to the point where their heads were hanging on, essentially.
Yeah, it's not good.
It was a very grisly, horrible sight for all these people to have discovered.
It's a massacre.
Yeah. And not good. Just, it's a bad time overall. It became a media sensation, though. You know, these three women, they'd already been missing. The media had already kind of jumped on it. You know, it was the 60s. Newspapers are trying to chase leads and get stories.
And this is a mystery.
Trying to sell papers.
It's a mystery, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off as a mystery.
Yep. So photos are taken. The search goes out, and people want to know what happened.
I mean, I would too.
Because these are seemingly just middle-aged women that had just gone out for bird watching.
Right.
And ended up being brutally murdered.
Murdered, yes.
Their husbands pooled a $30,000 reward together and sent out and just to try to get, you know, people interested in getting tips. The guy that owned Starved Rock or owned the lodge at the time, his name was Spiros, added $5,000 into that reward.
I mean, good on him. Yeah.
Yeah. And tips start rolling in. All sorts of people are calling in saying they know who did it. You know, this person, that person.
Which also, that's what happens when money's involved. People just say things.
People want the money.
So that's not a good thing, actually. And honestly, if I knew something and I called in about a crime, I don't think I would honestly take the money. If it's $5,000, I'm not taking it. I don't think I would. I mean,
well, it was $35,000, and that was in 1960.
Yeah, so that's a good chunk of money.
A lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But I mean,
that'd be like $200,000 now.
God.
Or just guessing. But
if I actually knew, that's a question I think everybody should ask themselves, truly. Would you, if you had a lead, would you turn it in and take the money? Or just turn it in to help?
Well, if you think along those lines, too, it's what is the lead? Like, did I see somebody getting murdered and I walked away? Like,
right.
Like, no, that's probably not it. It's probably like, oh, I saw somebody that was kind of being weird, but I didn't think anything of it at the time.
Right.
Does that feel like it's worth $35,000, though? Like,
also,
just to call and mention that?
No. Right. But I mean,
it is a.
But if you saw something, maybe say it, but then don't ask for the money. Are they trying to get the everybody's trying to get the money, right? Is that the
most
idea?
Likely? So I mean, a lot of it probably, but maybe it is an incentive. So I don't know. It is a weird thing. I didn't think about it, but yeah, that is kind of a...
I mean, I'm just thinking about it, obviously, this surreal moment as you present it to me. Like, would I actually do that?
Yeah.
Would I take the money? I'd say no. I want to say no. I mean, obviously, you have people listening like, yeah, just take the money. I mean, just take the money. It's, you get money. But like, so you get $200,000 in the bank and like, yeah, well, I thought somebody might have got murdered, so now I have $200,000 because they gave it to me.
It is a...
It's a conundrum. It's worth thinking about. Where do you fall on that spectrum? It's easy to say, I just take the money because you need money. This is the society we exist in.
Yeah.
But like, would you take the money? Man, I don't... It's tough.
It is tough. I think I'd probably take it. I don't think I'd be asking for it, but if somebody was like, thanks, and then handed it to me, I'd be like, oh, okay.
Well, it's almost like, I would almost say like there's a difference. Like, let's say you call in to like, you call in just because you thought you saw something. Like, well, here's a couple $1,000. Be like, oh, okay, thanks. But if I'm calling to get the money, I feel
right.
like there's a...
I think that's, yeah.
So if it's announced, like, here's $200,000 or whatever the fuck, just because you thought you might have saw someone get murdered, and you call in like, ah, you know, this brutal thing is going to make you $200,000. That's how I look at it in my head, and it's gross.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, like, oh, I wasn't going to say anything except for now I'll get paid, so now I'll say something.
That's gross. Right, yeah. Right.
Well.
It's a thought, you know.
It is a thought. Well, like I said, tips start rolling in.
Naturally, right.
People want this solved. Like, this is people's mothers. These are grandmothers.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I don't know the familiar, you know, relationships. I don't know.
They're definitely mothers. I don't remember if they were actually grandmothers yet, but they were definitely mothers at this point.
Yeah.
Because they were survived by like 9 children, I believe.
Yeah.
So this goes nationwide. It's in the papers everywhere.
Again, when I say it's one of those Starved Rock stories, I mean, if you live in this area, I mean, again, like you said, it's nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
The Starved Rock murders, there's been some.
Yeah.
And that's even ignoring the historical context of why it's called Starved Rock.
Right. Well, the city of, I believe it's LaSalle.
It's out there.
Wants it solved. Or, you know, like, everybody wants it solved.
Yeah.
But the state's attorney at the time decides to really lean into it, and he wants to solve it. And his name was Harlan Warren.
Okay.
And the police are searching. They're not really getting anywhere, though. They've started investigating the employees at the lodge. They're like the main suspects.
Okay.
Because they're the ones there all the time.
Okay.
And nearest to this thing.
Okay.
And they start looking into it. Harlan Warren was not satisfied enough with how the police were going about it, and they were just hitting dead end after dead end. So he, I guess, took it upon himself to start investigating a little bit.
Okay.
Which is, I think, a little interesting for a state's attorney to do. But
he's made it his like priority.
Yeah.
This is what he's doing.
I mean, you're also the state's attorney at the time, and this is the biggest case you may ever get.
Yeah.
And it's... seems to be a dead end, so he's trying to push it forward, I guess.
Yeah.
So you can't blame him for that either.
No, of course not.
Well, so he is going over the evidence one night, and he's examining the cordage that bound these women, and decides to, you know, go to the lodge when it's closed and look around and see if this is a cord that is used in the location anywhere. Like, can he find it? And he does find it. He finds it in part of like a butcher's block in the kitchen. And it has like the same amount of strings, because, you know, cord is intertwined.
Yeah.
String. And that's how he, like, because forensic back then were not exactly
what
they are now.
I mean, there was a point in history where you could just do anything and no one would ever know.
Yeah, you could just go to the next town and be like, nope.
I'm done. My name's
Dave now.
Why did we both think of the same name? I was going to say Dave. Yeah, I used to be Daryl, now I'm Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know. You don't tell anybody that. In your head, you're like, now I'm Dave.
I'm Dave.
Yeah. It's
weird. There was a guy that looked a lot like me. His name was Daryl. But
nobody's
seen him in a while.
And he didn't have this bushy beard.
Yeah.
It's weird, but I mean, if you ever find him, you know, let me know. What? Why would I find him? Moving on.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
They start polygraph testing everybody that worked in the kitchen.
I mean, not the best method, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm. At the time, it's what they were working with.
They need something, right. Technology was so advanced, it was moving quickly.
They got to space.
They did get to space. Worth pointing that out. They did get to space.
Yeah.
With a computer way less complicated than your cell phone.
Yeah, wild.
Much larger.
And
people, lots of people.
Yeah. Well, polygraph tests, they're starting to ask people questions. They're asking everybody. But the polygraph guy comes out at one point, and he's like, that's our guy.
Oh, shit. And what's that guy about?
So Chester Rocky Weegar.
What?
Failed the polygraph test.
Okay.
To the point where it got the polygraph examiner to point him out to the cops and the state's attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, he admitted to carrying the cordage. He liked to do the cat's cradle games. He would also use it to make traps in the park and around his home.
Okay.
He grew up very poor. He hunted squirrels and raccoons.
Okay.
For sustenance.
He's outdoorsy guy.
Yeah, grew up like dirt poor, basically.
Right, and I mean LaSalle.
Yeah.
It's a rural town.
Mm-hmm. So. He said he would use it for trapping game. And, you know, this kind of gets national attention. Like, people are, like, they start following him. So, before it gets national attention, they're on him, though. And they start, the cops kind of maybe start harassing him a little bit. He's noticing he's being followed.
Okay.
Then something else comes up.
Yeah, what is this?
At the age of 12... Weegar had been convicted of statutory rape.
Well, that's not looking good for him.
He had supposedly raped a young girl, an 8-year-old, and
oh my God,
was arrested for it and was picked up. He claims that he had just been assisting her home after she had been raped by someone else. It doesn't look good, though, no matter what you look at it from the perspective of the investigators, right?
Well, they're already onto him looking for suspicious stuff, and they found out this happened in his history. So it's in their minds, like, that's our guy.
Yeah. Then another story comes out. A woman, a teacher, has one of her students confess to her that she had been sexually assaulted a year before any of this murder stuff had happened in the state park.
Okay.
She said her and her boyfriend had been out for a walk when they were walking up a path and a young man holding a rifle told her to tie her boyfriend's hands behind his back, and then he proceeded to assault the woman.
Oh, my God.
And so she brought this to the teacher's attention, and when they heard about the murders and then they saw the man who had been accused now.
Chester.
Mm-hmm. She said that was him. And she picked him out of a lineup and had said that he used cordage similar to what they had found on the murdered women. And he had been rolling a bullet in between his teeth as he was committing the crime.
What a distinctive trait.
Yeah, and yeah. And
distinctive, horrifying. I mean, it's a collectively horrifying memory, but then have that, like, little, it stands out amongst all the horrible things that are happening.
Mm-hmm. So.
Oh my God.
At this point, Weegar is taken in.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to do it.
It's said that when he had been denying everything and wouldn't confess to anything. And then his mother was with him, and then she said, "Now tell the truth, son." And she left the room, and then came the confession. He confessed to murdering these women. He said how it happened was he was out. He'd been out and followed the women, and he thought they had a purse. So he went to grab the purse, and it turned out to be the binoculars or the camera.
Okay.
I believe he said it was the binoculars.
Okay.
And then he somehow cowed the women into being tied up.
Did he use a rifle, maybe?
Maybe.
Is that ever come up at all?
He didn't claim to use the rifle.
We don't know how he threatened them to convince them to...
Not that I saw. And so a lot of this comes from a book I read about a year ago, and I just kind of like freshened up on it. This has been like one I've been debating whether or not to do for a long time.
Okay.
And then I, with it coming up on like the 64 anniversary or whatever, I was like...
The months are lining up.
Yeah, it just kind of lined up to the point where I was like, okay. But somehow he cowed them into being tied up. And maybe he threatened to have a gun. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then he turned, you know, he tried to leave. And one of the women broke free, he said, and attacked him with the binoculars, to which he grabbed a branch and swung back, striking the woman in the face. And she collapsed. And then he decided that he had to cover it up. He couldn't be caught for this. So he went back and he beat the other women to death with the branch. And then he exposed them to make it look like a rape so that they would be looking for a rapist when all he had really wanted to do was rob them.
Okay.
So he made this confession. It's a long confession. He signed every single page of it, admitting that, you know,
this is facts according to him.
Mm-hmm. The following day, he was walked out with the cops, the state's attorney, and the media to the location where the murder was, where he reenacted the entire thing.
Oh my God.
To the point where, like, they were using, like, stand-ins, basically. And he was, like, handcuffed with, like, a chain lead and stuff.
Sure.
But then, like, walked...
Yeah,
it's them through exactly how he did this murder.
Okay.
So after he...
It's quite a display.
After he confessed and then role-played how he murdered three women of the police, state's attorney, and media, the following day he came back and said he was innocent and he would prove it in court.
I mean, when... Okay. So it's, I mean, just attention, if not true... Or just a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, a man craving attention decides to do all these things, to say all these things, and then flip the script to do other things. I mean, it's just a shit show.
It's not good.
I don't like it.
Some of the evidence against him was that there was blood splatter on his jacket. He insisted that it was... from squirrel and raccoon hunting. He had a scratch on his face, his coworkers had said, that looked like he had been in a fight with a cat. He says that he cut himself shaving.
Okay.
During his reenactment of the murder, he said that the reason he dragged the bodies underneath the cave was because he had seen a red and white airplane flying around and he was worried it was the state police, I believe.
Okay.
The investigators went around and discovered that there had been a white and red plane that confirmed flying over the state park on March 14th.
Okay.
There was a carving inside the cave wall that basically matched the tattoo he had on his arm. He went by Rocky, and he had Rocky tattooed on him. He was in the Marines, I believe, and he had it done during that. And it was basically that carved in the rock wall. His alibi was for the day was that he was alone writing a love letter to someone.
Good one. How do you prove that?
Yeah, it wasn't his wife either, because he was married. Nothing was robbed from the murdered women. They all still had their jewelry and everything. So, more evidence comes out against the character of Chester Uyghur. The locals start to say that he was always a weird guy.
Well, right now he's just a mess, so go on.
He would hide in the trees and eat his lunch up in the tree, at the schoolyard and stuff, and,
oh, we don't need to be doing
make
that.
Noises at people.
Let's not do that, Chester.
It said that he was abusive to his wife.
Okay.
And, yeah, and then the other crimes that he's already been pointed out against him. Well, the one he was convicted of as a juvenile, the other one of the year before that he wasn't really convicted of yet, but was called out in a line.
What was that one?
That was the one where the other girl confessed to her teacher that.
Okay. Yeah.
So all these things are stacking up against him. And this being the case of 1960, and it's in the 1961, I think now, but this is national attention, right? Everybody's Chester Uyghur did it.
I mean, everything they've ever read or heard is this guy's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Everything that's published, mm-hmm. all his weirdness, confessing, and then reenacting things and denying it, and it's just a big random shit show.
Yeah.
With Chester as a star.
So they go through the case. The state's attorney that was in charge at the time.
Yeah.
Ended up not convicting, or they didn't get the arrest. It was a election year, and so there was politics involved and stuff, and he said he wasn't going to have him arrested without having the evidence they needed before okay. the election, because then they would just say it was a politically motivated arrest.
Okay.
Just to get the crime, so he didn't go through with it. He ends up losing the election because people think he's getting the job done.
Yeah, because he purposely decided he wasn't going to do the job. Or, he's got his different criteria he wants.
Yeah.
He didn't want to seem biased, he was just doing it to get elected, so then he doesn't get elected.
Yeah. But he eventually, Uyghur's arrested. They go through the case. The state is pushing for murder and a death penalty.
Okay.
He is found guilty. The jurors select to give him life, though, and not the death penalty.
Okay.
One of the jurors came forward and said that part of the reason they gave him life instead of the death penalty was they didn't think he could have done it by himself.
Interesting.
The officers in question also became a point of contention. A lot of people came out and said that the detectives involved were crooked and would have done anything to solve the case. It was politically motivated.
Yeah,
things along those lines.
Right.
Okay.
And all potentially valid points.
Yeah, they are.
You know what I mean?
They are valid.
They don't trust the investigation. They don't trust the people involved. They just think, again, like you just said, man, that's a tough one.
After Harlan Warren died, he died at over 90 years old, so relatively recently. The granddaughter of Harlan Warren found a plan that some people say he got hammered, and it is in kind of rough handwriting. But they found a plan written up to commit psychological warfare against Chester Uyghur to get him to confess. And some of the things in it said deputy made it up or things along those lines.
Okay.
So things are, people have always had questions about this.
Yeah.
And things, this is a pretty hot topic. Like mm-hmm. when you watch people of the area out near Starved Rock
yeah.
get asked, it's like half these people say he didn't do it. There's not a chance. Half the people say a dead ringer for it.
Right.
You know. So this is a very contentious.
Well, yeah, and all the incongruent, like, you know, back and forth and this and that
mm-hmm.
from every angle. He's kind of a weirdo, but did he do it? Are the cops corrupt? Do they just want to? It's a lot going on.
Yeah, and so that another thing, how did they pick him in the first place? Was the polygraph examiner was the one that was like, this guy.
Yeah, he started it.
And we know that that's not really a accurate tool
just,
anymore.
He could have just been really nervous.
And that's kind of what he said. He said he was nervous and he was moving around to try to throw off the tests and stuff.
Which he might have done by making himself look guilty.
Yeah, like...
Didn't know how, I mean, he didn't know how to throw off a test. He's just doing whatever, if that's the case.
Yeah. The cops that... Or the detectives that arrested him and were following him and stuff supposedly were... trying to force a confession out of him. The one guy would threaten him. And he said, he'd always say, Chester, you're going to ride a thunderbolt.
Oh, my God. That's not nice to say.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's just not... But see, that's, it's just not professional talk.
And he went on the stand and said that he never said that. However, the assistant state's attorney confirmed that he lied under oath because he definitely heard him say it multiple times.
Right there.
So that's not a good look for your case.
That's bad.
When you got a cop lying on the stand.
Right, who doesn't care and just saying whatever.
The previous rape case where he was in the lineup supposedly was a little bogus. And when you see the picture of the lineup, because there is a picture of it, it's not good because it's like 50-year-old plus men and then Chester Weegar, 21. And
okay.
Yeah.
So she knew it was a younger guy, so he's the one that stands out.
Mm-hmm. And supposedly... one of the cops was in, like, went in the lineup and said, "Did this guy do it?" And
yeah, leading the person picking out the people.
The prosecutor that convicted this case back in the day, when interviewed, said that he would not have been convicted today based on the evidence they had now. Back then, things were different, though, and you can't base his conviction on modern expectations.
No. So there's that.
So that's not great.
Probably not. Nope. Kind of a confirmation that maybe this was bullshit.
Weegar says he confessed and did the role play in the expectation that people would realize he was being forced to confess this. And the motive was robbery, yet nothing was taken.
Right. So even if you're covering it up, if your idea was to rob them, it's strange nothing was taken.
Mm-hmm. The cop that had, you know, been threatening him with riding a thunderbolt was a member of the Airmen's Club, so knew when certain planes would be flying or had flown or maybe even had flown it himself.
Okay.
And that's what... big part of the evidence against Weegar was that how would he know that that plane was overhead if he wasn't there?
Right, but they're thinking they just wrote it in there?
Well, they're thinking maybe that guy was out for a flight that day and told him to say it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, so I wrote here, Dummett and Hess, they were the two detectives, may have made it up and told the state's attorney about the plane. It's a weird thing that that Dummett guy kept the log that was known to be the murder weapon as a mantelpiece.
Yeah, not good either. Not a fan.
The prosecuting lawyer said that he had a questionable reputation.
You can even do that? You can just take the murder weapon and make it your mantelpiece? That's the thing you can just do?
This case was not well handled. From
it doesn't seem like it.
The get-go. Weird thing is the state's attorney and the cops kept the reward money.
So nobody got anything anyways.
The state's attorney got the bulk of the money.
Oh, wait, why? yeah, why would he get that?
I don't know. Doesn't look good.
Well, this also feels like something very serious happened in a smaller town that was not equipped or prepared to handle anything of this
serious
nature.
That's a huge part of it.
They just have no idea what's going on.
Yep.
They're like, we have to do something?
The state
God.
Police got involved at one point because it was just being
shit
horrible.
Show. Right.
Yeah. Obviously, this is a very quick summary of this
sure.
entire
and
thing.
And I'm sure it's more a little, maybe more complicated, but it doesn't sound great from these bullet points.
I'm trying to hit...
Yeah, the main issue.
Because it's a very complicated story.
Of course. But even just from this, it seems like it.
But we, you know, we have a show that is not a very complicated show.
I understand.
So.
Yeah, I understand.
Otherwise, we'd have to do like a few episodes on that.
No, many things, I mean, we've even done in the past could have been miniseries. So like this.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, you're a whole book. So like, of course. Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. But just not equipped for anything of this complexity. The police, just not.
No, they were 100% not ready for this.
It
nope.
feels like we got to do something. Oh, God. This? Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's on the national.
Yeah, just all the pressure, all the attention.
National stage.
Used to doing whatever you want. Now everyone's watching your every move. It's like, oh, geez.
Yep. The evidence, like I said, was not handled well.
Yeah.
The women's clothes and the bloody buckskin jacket were all shoved in the same bag.
Smart. What? Okay.
Uyghur eventually changed his alibi to he was getting a haircut, and his friend, I didn't write his friend's name down. I don't remember. Ferguson, I think it was. I could be wrong on that. But he had a alibi with a guy that was supposed to corroborate, and he was put on the stand to corroborate.
And he said he got a haircut?
And he got cold feet in the courtroom and couldn't remember being with Uyghur ever.
Damn it.
Or not on that date.
Right. I don't know this guy. What?
Oh, Stanley Tucker. There it is. I wrote it down later.
Okay.
Then other people come forward, you know, later in life and say that they saw Stanley Tucker with his girlfriend after being in court and said he was threatened to come clean with saying he was with Chester Uyghur. Or threatened if he said he was with him.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. Like, why would you... I don't know.
You just want to get your guy and anything that can exonerate him. You're like, nope. Got to put that to bed. Put that to bed. Put that to rest.
Yeah. So this, like I said, this is 1960.
Yeah.
Eventually, internet sleuths come about. Right?
Yeah. How do they deal with this?
Well, if not Uyghur, who did it? They start trying to figure that out.
Yeah, fair.
There's a guy named Smokey Rona that was involved with organized crime at the time.
Oh, God.
The internet sleuths say that the husbands may have put out a hit on their wives.
What?
Because after the murder, one had gotten married to his secretary. That is supposedly a typo in the newspaper print, though, that people found, and it was not until years later.
Okay.
Supposedly.
Suppose, all right, okay.
George Spiros was another. Oh, so Smokey Rona, I kind of skipped over that. He was involved in organized crime.
Yeah.
Some people say he had confessed to murdering up to 18 people, just like in casual conversation.
One of those, okay.
Which,
I mean,
if you did that, would you brag about that to your neighbor or whatever?
I guess there's nowhere to prove it. You can just say it if you want, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think he was looked into as a suspect, but
they let him.
Like, it seemed like everybody kind of knew what he was doing, and it wasn't following women in the woods to murder them.
Right.
He was more organized crime stuff.
Right, specific targets or whatever.
Yeah. And then George Spiros was the family owner of the lodge.
Okay.
And. Or his dad owned the lodge, but George Spiros. Actually, I'm mixing up which one this is, but one that was the main suspect, the Spiros, was found dead with his groceries sitting on his doorstep. He had killed himself and his dog. He was naked from the waist down, and this was the day after the attorney that was trying to get Uyghur paroled filed to investigate him.
Strange.
Strange.
Very much so.
No matter how you look at it.
Strange way to go.
Spiros allegedly had dogs and would harass female staff. People surmise that he could have used his dogs to cow these women into being tied up.
Oh, it's a thought. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Another thing we got is the prosecutor that got him put away.
Okay.
Says he, in an interview, said he doesn't really believe the confession. However, he does believe he was guilty, but it was a sex crime, not a robbery. So he believes he got the right person. He just doesn't believe what he told everybody to get him put away was the right reason.
Okay.
So he thinks he's the guy.
Yeah.
And he thinks he did the right, he did his job and got the right guy put away.
He got him, yeah.
He just doesn't believe why.
Yeah. The motives don't match the deed.
Yeah, but so he's ultimately content with how he did, but he's just
like, whatever, I got him.
Job's done. The murderer's right. Put behind bars.
The ends justify the means.
Yeah.
We got him. The end.
On August 1st, 2022, hair evidence tested from the Starved Rock murders got DNA tested. It was a man's hair, but it did not belong to Uyghur. They did not know who the hair was. However, the evidence had been so mishandled that hundreds of people had handled it.
It could have been a cop. It could have been anybody.
The author of the book that I read in an interview says he handled it. He's like, yeah, I had it. Everybody had it. It doesn't really prove.
No, there's no variables here.
And that just shows how bungled this whole thing was, really.
Yeah, it's a cluster.
Yeah. So there's no. As of last year, a year ago, pretty much to the date, there's no DNA match in the data bank. So whoever's DNA was has
nobody
never...
Nobody's done anything or gotten picked up for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In 2019, Tony Rakula, the prosecutor that I've mentioned that got him put away, passed away. And it was after 24 tries and... Rakulia, believing he had the right man behind bars, no longer there to argue for against his parole, that after 24 tries, Chester Uyghur was granted parole and has been released from prison in Joliet. He now, I don't check if still, but I believe he's still resides in a halfway house for elderly former convicts in Chicago.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. So, Jesus.
That is the Starved Rock murders. I do think he did it.
Think so? Think they got the right guy?
I do.
What leads you to believe that based on what you've read?
I think it was bungled. I think it was a lot of problems.
Yeah, I agree.
But a lot of the stuff, the MO kind of fits. The cordage thing's weird. It's in the kitchen. He worked with it. His coworkers say he's scratched up. He's not looking good. He doesn't really have a sound alibi.
Yeah.
Maybe they did make up that plane thing and force it to him. But also, maybe they didn't. And
yeah,
if he said that in there. Also, maybe it's me being crazy, but if I didn't murder three women... And they made me sign a bunch of papers, I would not do it.
Right. He might have been more scared than you would have been, though.
Maybe. And that's, you know what I mean? And then entirely possible.
That's why he changed his mind. Mm-hmm. But I mean, right, yeah. If you for sure didn't do that, you'd think, but I mean, how scary or fucked up were these cops even being? Again, weird guy, history of bad stuff. Feel like he tracks.
So the book I read 100% makes it look like...
Yeah, he's the guy.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
And it's a local historian. He's still doing stuff as far as I know.
Cool.
That wrote that book. But he wrote it in like the late 60s or maybe early 70s.
Okay. What was the name of the book by chance?
The Murders at Starved Rock, I think.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Sure.
Because like I had it from the library. So
yeah. What's always, I mean, especially it being an Illinois localish story, I mean, you always hear about those murders. Maybe not the intricacies of the case, but you hear about. That's why when we began this path, I was like, oh, it's this kind of a Starved Rock story.
Yeah.
Like the Starved Rock.
The book's called The Starved Rock Murders. It's okay. By Steve Stout.
Okay.
It was in 1982 that he wrote it.
Damn it.
A couple decades off.
So 22 years after the murders.
Yeah. But like I said, he was a local historian. He interviewed a lot of the people that were there.
Yeah.
There's also HBO did a documentary on this that came out recently.
Really?
Like maybe last year. And when I read the book, I did watch it back then.
Okay.
And it's basically the prosecutor's son conducting the interviews and stuff, because he's not so sure. Like, he's not convinced he did it.
Son isn't?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he's like asking his dad, and that's where you see a lot of the interview for him. And it's got to be kind of nuts to interview your dad about
prosecutor
that is convinced he put away this murderer, and then your son's like trying to convince.
Right.
But ultimately, he kind of thinks Uyghur did do it.
Yeah.
Because he eventually gets in contact with them in prison, and they write letters back and forth, and he writes like some pretty fucked up shit to him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And like just makes like, it like, okay, this guy's
off.
Yeah, this guy's dark. Like something's off here. It's not really our normal story.
No.
But it's a part of our local history. And
it is, yeah.
It's one I've had in the back pocket for a while, and
sure.
Just with the timing.
I mean, it is March, yeah.
Yeah. And he's released now, so he can listen to this and give me a high five or something.
What? Oh, my God. What?
And I'll be like, oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Pretty wild, though.
Yeah, it certainly is, yeah.
There's a lot of problems. There's a... Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's not.
Especially when you see, like, the interviews of the family that lost their grandmothers.
Yeah, which also should never be forgotten, that this clusterfuck started because, I mean, real humans affected by real dark shit that they just have to live with. As the media frenzy goes on, and they're just missing their loved ones over this horrifying act.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's not good. It was gruesome. And a poor example of how crimes were treated back then. Like, now...
There's things like this led to having things in place to deal with these things.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not good. But I don't know. I can also... I see the arguments against why he could be innocent.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's my opinion.
Yeah,
I could be totally wrong on that.
Sure.
But
I mean, yeah, I mean, I got nothing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's kind of hard to form an opinion based off me kind of hitting you with a bunch of highlights.
No, but I mean, even still, like, all the evidence you can read can be convincing one way or another, but like, you just have to absorb it for what it is and all you know from reading and watching things. And just kind of go with that because none of us were there.
No.
None of us get anything.
Yep.
And with everything being bungled the way it was, I mean, ugh.
Yeah. And if you look at everybody that was involved with the case, that is still like alive in that show and everything, they're all like 100% convinced they got their guy.
Sure. So they believed it. Mm-hmm. Everything convinced them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, yeah, hopefully. Hopefully the guy who did this got put away.
Hopefully the right guy got put away.
Right. I mean, you don't want an innocent man in jail and a guilty man running free. So hopefully it all tracked the way they wanted it to.
Yeah.
And the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's It's a wild one. It's a doozy. It's a bad one. It's dark shit.
It's it's dark. Definitely dark.
Yeah.
Something to think about when you're out at Starved Rock.
Well, like, it's always one of the, it's one of those stories that then lives in the back of your mind, you know, the back of your psyche, even if you don't know, like, the exact details of the case, just being alone in the woods or hiking, you know, like, mm-hmm. It's one of those things that leads to, you know, that thought in the back of your head, what's around, you know what I mean? Who's around? Pay attention, stay alert. You never, I mean, just because you never know.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Stay aware of your surroundings.
But even that's not even to place blame in any direction. It's just that you just don't know.
You don't know. Yeah. That's why all you can do is try to be aware.
Yeah. Hopefully the right guy got put away. That's all you can hope for.
Yeah.
Because that shit is fucked up.
Yeah. So that's a real life murder story, which is spooky.
It's definitely has mysterious elements and ne'er-do-wells involved. So,
man is the real monster.
It's a consistent theme. Man always is the real monster. So, yeah, if you have any thoughts or comments or, you know, just anything of that nature, email us at weirdandfruitpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a review wherever you're able to, you know, pros, you know, cons. Just let us know. Give us the feedbacks. We appreciate you all so much. Yep. And, yeah, follow us on the patreon.com/weirdandfeared where we post, you know, these episodes that go straight into Behind the Veil, which is kind of the conversations that happen when we're done recording the main episode. So check that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, the days are getting less dark. The sun is staying out longer. I mean, daylight savings, we're going to jump ahead. That's always a treasure. And so, I mean, even though things are lighter, you can still stay spooky.
Oh, yeah. Stay spooky.